Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. At only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later in the episode. All right, everyone. Welcome on to Hollinger and Duncan. John and I are going to do the pod for about an hour or so, and then we'll take your questions for about 20 minutes or so after that. So let's get to work here, John. And, you know, I've been criticized for this. We cover the NBA. I can't help but kind of be pretty depressed about the state of these playoffs right now.
So I was thinking about this the other day. This could end up being the worst finals in NBA history, just in terms of the level of teams that are playing and who's available on the floor. And that's not to disparage the teams that made it to this point. I mean, it's a tournament and injuries are part of it, and they had to fight some tough battles to get to this point, and flags fly forever no matter what. But I think, you know, you're looking at a situation where you could end up with like the sixth and ninth best records in the league playing in the finals, I think. And, you know, and the sixth best team playing without its best player, right? So it's maybe not what we envisioned when these playoffs started. I mean, I was expecting an absolute bloodbath, great battles, all that. And we just didn't get that, mostly because of these injuries and a little bit. I mean, Philly, obviously, face planning didn't help. But I think the injuries really just took a lot of the steam out of these playoffs.
Well, so this now, assuming Giannis misses his next game, which seems like probably a safe bet as we record this right now, we haven't seen anything on that. Although I think the longer it goes, probably the worse you feel about what the eventual news is going to be.
Well, they said no structural damage, but...
Oh, did that come out just now?
Yeah, that came out, but there's a difference between no structural damage and, hey, let's roll him out there tomorrow. So...
Well, that's actually amazing. He's listed as doubtful. I mean, that's insane. Clearly he has, you know, probably a bone bruise and maybe like a knee capsule thing or something. Like, it's hard to imagine that he, I mean, my guess would still be that he's going to miss the rest of the playoffs, you know.
Certainly the rest of this series. I mean, the finals are set up to last like a freaking month and a half if it goes seven. So maybe he could play by the end of those. I wouldn't expect him back for this series. And, you know, it's important to note because Trae Young is a bone bruise too. When people say bone bruise, it's not like, haha, the bruise I get on my arm. I mean, that's actually, it's actually a little more serious than that. And I didn't really realize this until I worked on the team side. But like, there's stuff going on when you have a bone bruise. And so that's something that needs to be treated.
It's basically almost a fracture, essentially. Yeah. It has to be treated like it's a fracture. You have to rest. Otherwise, you're going to get a lot of pain. I mean, I think that's why Trae couldn't play. I mean, like, if that was an ankle sprain, you know, yeah, you're at risk of spraining it worse. But like, the pain from a bone bruise is far more than what you're going to get, I think, from just like a normal ankle sprain.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, back to the overall theme. I mean, that is amazing to hear about Giannis, that at least, you know, this isn't going to be something that's going to impact him into next year, hopefully, and particularly as bad as it looked. You know, there was a concern that, you know, if there was some kind of a lateral movement as well, as opposed to just the hyperextension, that could have impacted the ACL, that the PCL could be impacted. So yeah, I mean, that's like really fantastic. And I mean, he's an incredible athlete to not get injured on that play. But back to what you're saying here, I mean, let's go through with the players who are available right now on the floor, and how many teams how many games do those teams win in the regular season, right? If you go through all four of them, I mean, the Suns largely have their team, but Chris Paul is coming back from COVID, you know, so I think their campaign is injured. So probably a bit fewer than they won during this year's regular season, but that's, you know, that's a solid low to mid 50s winning team, probably, with Phoenix on the floor there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They are the most intact by far of any of these teams now.
Yeah, Clippers without Kawhi.
And I mean, without Zubats too.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Although, as I talked about with Danny the other day, I think no Zubats actually really helped them win that game. But
very, very possible.
But yeah, I mean, Zubats would be an important player in the regular season. But I mean, how many of the players who are available in tonight's game six, how many games does that team win in the regular season?
44.
Right? Yeah,
it's Paul George's Pacers is what it is, right? Like, that's,
yeah, for maybe 47. I mean, they've got guys playing at a high level defensively. They space the floor. Like, I think this could be a very good offensive team in theory. Like they are kind of more than the sum of their parts because of just
that.
Because of the way that they're able to play when they don't have a center out there that just like causes major problems for all these teams that have centers. Atlanta with no Trae Young.
Yeah. Trying to think. They pretty much have everyone else, right? I mean, they finally have Chris Dunn back and Cam Reddish. But yeah, Atlanta without Trae Young, I mean, as well as they played in game four, still think that's probably tops out as a 500 team.
Yeah. Maybe you could say their defense would be better and like, you know, maybe they're an average defense and a slightly above average offense with like Gallo.
I mean, it's still Lou Williams starting at point guard. I mean, how much of a change in defense are we talking about?
Yeah. Not a great passing team. At this point, you would say. And then the Bucks without Giannis, you know, like last year's Bucks without Giannis had like, you know, a 5 net rating, but that was a much deeper team. This year's team, they've got, you know, probably 7 or 8 guys. I mean, so that's, you know,
there's no DiVincenzo either, remember?
Yeah, thanks for that reminder too. I mean, that's another crazy part of this. So yeah, I mean, that's again maybe, you know, a 45 win team, something like that, if you're feeling good about it. I mean, the best player in that series right now is Chris Middleton.
Who
should have made the All-Star team this year but didn't, and he's got it still sort of a lower level East All-Star. And yeah, so that's now, if Giannis misses the next game, 10 All-Stars plus Trae Young who've missed times in these playoffs. And so yeah, I mean, that is, it's a real bummer. And like, I think you can enjoy the drama on the floor because that's what this is leading to. These teams are all kind of pretty evenly matched, and like it's leading to maybe some good games. But like, what I love the most about the NBA is just the absolute best stars, the high level of basketball, the feeling that you are watching the absolute best possible basketball in the world, guys going all out in a 7-game series, trying to adjust to one another, the strategic elements, that the strategic problems that these great players cause other teams, and you're kind of missing that right now.
Yeah, we're watching a bunch of 3-6 series, basically.
Yeah, and 3 might even be a little, these are like 4-5 series, maybe.
3 in the East.
Yeah, so, I mean, so this year's champion, given the level that they're playing at right now, I think you would have to say this year's champion will probably be the worst champion since 1979. The Sonics?
Yeah, you definitely make that case. Even like 94 Rockets probably would have.
And you got Akeem. Yeah, I mean, Akeem is way better than anybody who's on these teams right now.
Yeah, yeah. And then 95 Houston didn't win as many games, but by the tail end of the playoffs, I mean, they went through the toughest playoff gauntlet of any team in history. And so you'd have to put them ahead. So yeah, you're probably going back to 79. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, you could say like 2011 Mavs, I mean, that was still, you know, a high 50s win team in the regular season. And they also went through a crazy gauntlet. They went through like Kobe and KD and LeBron and Wade in the finals.
Lakers, had to beat LeBron and Wade in the finals. Yeah.
2006 Miami is maybe another one you could point to, but they beat a 64 win Pistons team that made it to like what, 6 straight East finals.
And then they beat Dirk in the finals, who was the reigning MVP that year.
Well, that was actually the next year, but yeah, I mean,
he won MVP. Did. You're right. Yeah. Okay, I stand corrected.
Yeah, yeah, because he was like the first MVP to lose in the first round in like a really long time the next year. I think you probably would have to go back to like some of those late 70s champions, the 78 Washington, to say that, and this Suns team, I mean, you know, maybe if they get everyone back and they're really hitting on all cylinders, you might say that's a little bit harsh on them, but. Yeah, I mean, they're not playing very well right now either. I think it's pretty clear.
I mean, if the Suns got clicking, you could argue for them as being like a like the Billups Hamilton Pistons, like on that level.
Yeah, but champion. Those, I mean, and that team also was maybe the greatest defense of all time.
Yes,
and they also went through like a pretty good gauntlet of opposing players. Whereas
the Pacers got injured when Indiana maybe could have beat them and had the best record in the East. They went 7 with New Jersey the round before that, even though New Jersey wasn't that good. And then the Lakers had Malone and Payton go out in the finals, although they seem to have the Lakers pretty outclassed in that finals.
Yeah, Malone being available might have definitely changed things a little bit. But yeah, I mean, they still had a, like, in the regular season, like for 26 games, they had like a 12 net rating or something after the Wallace trade.
Yeah.
And the reality with the Suns still is that, I mean, I don't think that Devin Booker or Chris Paul are like top 10 players in the league right now if everyone is healthy. But obviously, being healthy, it kind of matters as well. And also, I mean, you just, when you look at the teams that the Suns went through, I mean, it's not, you know, you can, some of these teams, like, all right, they didn't have that much star power, but they went through teams that did and were really good. I mean, if the Suns win it, you know, and let's say Giannis doesn't play in the finals, I mean, the best team they beat was like the Clippers with no Kawhi Leonard during the Lakers with no Anthony Davis. I mean, it's just a pretty incredible run of good fortune for the Suns. But, and obviously, I think the other team that just has to be kicking themselves is Philly right now. I mean, to just like, to have not beaten the Hawks.
I mean, you'll never be gifted an opportunity like this, right?
Yeah. The Jazz kind of too. But the Jazz at least, you know, probably had more injuries than Philly.
Jazz can blame their backcourt injuries. Philly was really felt more self-inflicted.
Today on the road to the finals, our NBA playoffs coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. All right. Well, I can't wait to watch the rest of the playoffs. And who do you have winning it now? Suns, I guess?
I think you have to go with, you don't necessarily have to go with Phoenix, I guess, because, I mean, they've been outscored by the Clippers over the course of this series, right? Like, these last three games, especially, their offense has looked really bad, and it shouldn't be this hard to score against the Clippers, but both the Suns and the Jazz have kind of had problems with it. I still think you have to give the advantage to Phoenix because they're up 3-2. They still have a home game left to play. And then in a final series, I think the Giannis thing really changes things, where you have to give the advantage to whoever comes out of the West.
Or the Trae Young thing too. I mean, is it like, even if the Hawks somehow win that series, like, is he going to be 100%? You know, that you kind of wonder about that as well. And Giannis, even if he's able to return, he, especially because he's so reliant on his physicality, you wonder about like how good he could potentially be as well. And the Bucks, their depth is really compromised. I'm glad you brought up the DiVincenzo being out as well. We've kind of forgotten about that aspect. But you know, this Suns Clippers thing, I mean, probably some people will be listening to this will know what happens in game six already. You know, I might actually make the Clippers like slight favorites in games here going forward, now that they finally have like decided that, oh, DeAndre Ayton is not prime Shaq, and we can actually like go small against him and get him out of the lane. Like, we don't have to be scared of him like catching it on the roll and killing us. But I do wonder too, if they're going this small, just the concern about them running out of gas eventually. Well, but I mean,
definitely concerned about them running out of gas. I mean, they've been playing every other day since June 2nd. I mean, it's an entire month of playing every other day. And Paul George going 40 plus at playoff intensity in every single one of these. So I'm just waiting for them to like break down like the car in the Blues Brothers. And it hasn't happened yet. It looked like it was happening in game four, but then they came back and played really well in game five. But I do wonder if they just like show up for one of these games and just have nothing.
Yeah. They are in this incarnation again. You know, I think if you look, what would this team be in the regular season? Like, there are reasons in the regular season, they wouldn't start Marcus Morris at center all the time, and they would start Zubats, and they'd play a conventional style. Like, the fact that they've been forced into this and that other teams haven't been able to totally kill them on the other end, like, they are a very, very good offensive team when they go with these five out units, and they have good enough guards that they, you know, like Beverly has been awesome defensively in this series. But yeah, we probably shouldn't talk too much more about that because it's going to be obviated 2 hours after the
right, podcast
comes out. But yeah, I mean, I guess the Suns would be my favorite, but man, is that just, you don't feel amazing about that. Let's see here. What else? I guess actually it's time here to talk about the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. Let's make this a collaborative process. Who should be the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week? Paul George?
Man, it has to be Paul George, right? I mean, he's going to go 3 for 31 tonight or something. But I mean, he's been the best player in this round.
Nope. I think he hasn't had a great shooting game until this last one. But I mean, he's had probably the best game that anyone has had in this round. Trae Young was pretty good too. If he didn't have the bone bruise, it might have been him. But instead, Paul George. I hope it is worth it. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. At only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, joy creates success. Enjoyment isn't the end game; it's the whole game. And Paul George, the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week.
Can we talk about how strange it was that the announcers were killing him for like half that game?
Even as
he was kicking Phoenix's ass. Like,
it's not strange at all. Like, that's what they do. It shouldn't surprise you in the slightest.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, a little weird. But, you know, I'm sure he checked his phone at halftime and saw that they were killing him. And so that's why he did well in the second half, right?
Yeah.
So we have a couple of interesting organizational news items here. And let's start with the situation in Portland. I know you've written on this with David Aldridge about potential Dame destinations, but more so with just the process behind the coach hire, some of the negative headlines that has engendered, what secret signal you would have had to your PR person if you were giving a press conference to get them to intervene. These are the things that I would like to know.
See, in general, with something like this, you're going to sit down with your PR person and anticipate what questions you're going to be asked and how you will answer them. And so, especially with this situation with Billups, where he seemed prepared to answer that question and could have actually delivered an enlightening answer, and the Blazers shut that down, and then Olshay shut down the question about what they did to investigate this whole process, which makes you think that they did a sham investigation. If you're not willing to say anything about what the investigation was, then we automatically assume the worst, right?
Yeah.
And so I thought it was like their second public relations L since the season ended. And it just makes you wonder. I mean, maybe Billups will turn out to be a fine hire, but the other thing that was really weird was the whole Becky Hammond candidacy, if you can call it that, which seemed pretty obviously token, where it's just, look at us, we're interviewing a woman, but it like nobody thought she actually had a chance of getting the job. And that whole episode, I think, was very bizarre, very like transparently, like a transparent, a PR move so transparent that everyone saw it for what it was.
Yeah, it did not, none of this really seemed to go particularly well. I mean, there was reporting, which I guess you're not really much of a believer in, that Becky Hammond was the choice of Jody Allen. And there's also a thought that like Neil wanted Mike D'Antoni, but that seems to have pretty clearly been a ruse. Subsequent reporting has indicated that he was on Chauncey Billups this whole time.
And when I say this whole time, like going back a long time, before the season ended, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's they had some struggles during the year, and there's plenty of speculation about Terry Stotts' job status. So, that's not amazing either. And also the fact that the employee's title who broke in to interrupt the question is part of her title is Vice President of Community and Diversity. I think that's and that she would interrupt that line of questioning, which apparently is pretty important to the community. And also, I read this from Quick's thing today. That was basically like she just got hired. That was like the first thing that you have to do when you get hired is that.
Yeah, I don't understand why that person would be emceeing the press conference, actually, because they have, like, the Blazers have other PR people, and honestly, their PR people have generally been pretty good. Like the whole
There's beer in the media room.
I guess so.
What else?
There's beer, not fear. I'm sorry. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, that definitely wins them some points. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cleveland, you probably got fear in the media room, but or San Antonio. So I think what I wanted to ask you, though, is, you know, I don't recall that you guys hired someone with this controversial incident like this in their past in Memphis. But when you do hire people, what sort of background checks are kind of standard? You know, what sort of thing is even at your disposal to investigate an incident like this?
Yeah, I mean, usually you have team security people who have a lot of contacts within law enforcement and know places to look. And so you're able to do some background checks that maybe aren't available to the public, and hopefully find out some things. Now, this is a little different because you're talking about an incident from 1997 and it happened across the country. So I don't know how hot a trail you're going to be able to follow on that. But it's hard for me to answer that particular one because we never had to deal with like a skeleton out of somebody's past like that. At least that I can remember. So that's probably a difficult one. But I do think you want to lay out at some level what you did do, just to make yourselves credible. And Blazers completely failed on that.
Yeah, there is a standard, and, you know, Neil said, hey, there's nothing in there that would make him unemployable. Well, that's obviously a subjective standard.
Let me interrupt for 1 second. We should point out that Chauncey Billups was never found guilty of anything.
Oh, absolutely.
So this is an alleged incident that happened, and the allegations are harrowing and serious, but they are allegations. So there's the whole question of how you deal with that as well.
No, absolutely. And I think you have to try to look into the truth of the matter. And the reality is, too, that, you know, we have a criminal justice system for a reason. And also that, you know, something that happened 24 years ago, some people will agree, some people will disagree about whether that makes you employable or not, even if that incident did, in fact, happen. And, you know, certainly everybody glows about Billups' character since then. That's not dispositive of whether something happened 24 years ago. But I do think, getting back to it, having some transparency about the investigation, because obviously they came to the conclusion that this isn't a big enough deal to not hire him. And so obviously Neil O'Shea wanted to hire him, has this previous relationship with him. The default was going to be, this is the guy we want to hire, so we're going to come to a conclusion that allows us to hire him. Like, that's a reasonable assumption to make. And so to say, if you're okay, we hired a law firm to do an independent investigation, or, you know, I mean, I don't think you need to go into, all right, our investigation established that, you know, he left his house at this time, like that kind of stuff. But you need to, so you don't have to say, here are the exact factual findings we had, but at least say what the investigation consisted of, right? Like, that's where I think that it's really that they're doing everyone a disservice here.
Yeah. At least throw us a bone, give us some breadcrumbs that we can follow that sort of lets us know, okay, what was your process? How thorough were you? Like, and they just didn't give anything. And so that makes everyone doubt that they did anything.
Well, so now Chauncey Billups is going to be the head coach. What did you make of Damian Lillard's tweets and then the Chris Haynes report about his unhappiness? How seriously should we be taking that right now?
I thought, shout out to Chris Mannix, I thought he had a really good line that Lillard is the guy who doesn't know how to break up with his girlfriend. you know, I think he's questioning the situation and is trying to, but he doesn't want to be that guy either. And the fact is, there's no good way out of this, right? And, you know, he still has 3 years at least left on his deal too. So his leverage isn't that great at the moment. It seems like almost what you do is sort of this passive aggressive thing where you sort of let them dig their own grave, and then you push harder maybe. But it's gonna be really interesting to see how this evolves over the summer, depending on the moves that the Blazers make.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of components to this. I think one was just genuine frustration about how he was being portrayed in Portland on social media. You know, like Cannizzaro wrote this column that blamed him for the Billups hire, which I don't, you know, and that because of this things in Billups' past that Dame shouldn't have done that. I don't think that's fair to Dame Lillard. Like, Damian Lillard works for an organization and it's their responsibility to do this. And, you know, he has a relationship with Chauncey Billups. He shouldn't be like combing through police reports from when he was exactly 7 years old. Like, that's not a fair expectation for Damian Lillard. Like, this is just a professional environment and he's just, you know, he's going to evaluate who he wants to be coached by based on basketball reasons. And I don't think pushing something beyond that onto him is fair. You know, all right, if there's a conviction and there's stuff in the public record, okay, something where it's just like so obvious, then okay, maybe that's a different story. But this is not one of those situations. So I think some of the blowback that he's been getting in Portland is unfair. And my initial interpretation of that, particularly because now they've gone ahead with the Billups hire and they've also, you know, given him this long contract and Billups is still there despite that, is just that it was like, hey, like, I'm really upset by the way this is being portrayed and knock it off, everybody, unless you want me to leave. Like, I think that's kind of how I saw it, more as just like, this is him trying to force his way out of Portland right now with respect to the organization.
I think it's more like, I'm thinking about forcing my way out.
Yeah.
I'm not quite there yet, but it's definitely on the table at this point.
Well, and you know, the Mannix line is a great one, because how many people stay with someone because they're like, oh, I don't want to hurt him, or I have to let him down easily or whatever. But when you do that, this may be getting too philosophical, but when you know that you want to break up with someone and you drag it out, you think that you're doing it for them to like let them down gently or something, but you're really doing it for you. You're doing it so that you don't have to feel bad, when in reality, if you don't want to be with that person, it's better for everyone that you communicate that and end the relationship then. And it's the same case, I think, for Portland. And I think before this coaching hire was made, particularly after the way they went out in the playoffs, then Denver gets completely destroyed. You know, he had a tweet basically being like, I can't, you know, that essentially implied like, we lost to these dudes and now they're getting like hopelessly swept by the Suns. So like, how far away must we have been? I think this would have been an opportune time to do it. It's easier to make trades in the summer. I think that people might have understood if he wanted to move on, but he still has this great reputation as a leader and a winner and, you know, being this part of the Portland community. And clearly he values that and doesn't want to lose that, but he also might prefer to go play basketball somewhere where he has a chance to win a championship.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I still think he'd prefer that chance come in Portland. I do think he values being that guy who, you know, was an all-time great with one team for his whole career, but he's getting to his KG moment where he realizes there's limits to that.
Yeah. I mean, he's 31 now too. Like, this is, frankly, at his size, it's pretty impressive that he was able to play at the level he was in these playoffs. You know, that I think he's playing at a better level than I thought he would be when he signed that contract. And from Portland's standpoint too, right? The fact that he's under contract is a good thing, but it could easily become a bad thing if things kind of change there too, because that is a lot of money for a 34-year-old and then the player option as well. So that's, I think it really would be better for both sides if they just move on. But, you know, Neil O'Shea is trying to hang on to his job. He's under pressure now, and they just signed Billups, and we'll see. Billups, you know, the length of this deal could indicate that he's okay with trying to build something new here as well if Dame leaves, and he might understand that possibility. But
I wonder if he asked for the length of this contract as insurance against getting Silas'd.
Yes. So
which is my new encompassing term for any time you take a job thinking you'll be coaching a superstar and end up coaching a 20-win team instead.
Oh yeah, I've been using that on my pod now. It's a great term. Of course, we are brought to you today by Spotify Green Room. Used to be Locker Room, now it's Spotify Green Room. Tons of Locked On hosts are doing it. John and I do it on Wednesdays when we record. Usually that's going to be 2 Eastern, 11 Pacific. But now that John is back on the road, went to the combine last week, that's going to have to change every once in a while. But we'll keep you posted on Twitter. Check it out at NateDuncanNBA for the official time as we come up to it. And then Danny LaRue and I also do a Locker Room weekly, 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific on Tuesdays. And it's just a great chance to jump in, have a conversation with us. It's like sports radio, but actually the callers are smart and interesting and get a chance to go back and forth with us. It's a lot of fun. So go download the free Green Room app now. It's currently available on all iOS devices. You create a profile, you can link your Twitter, join the NBA group for the latest league updates. You can follow me at NateDuncanNBA. You get notified when my room goes live, and we will see you there every week. Green Room, changing the way we talk sports.
You bring up an interesting fact though, which is like, is it so bad for Portland at this point if they end up trading Lillard? Like, I don't think they're a realistic championship contender the way they're built. I don't think their salary cap structure lends them to ever getting to that point with the deals they have on the table. And they would get a freaking fortune in a Lillard deal right now.
Yeah, and it's easier to get more, I think, during the offseason than at the trade deadline for reasons that we've discussed before. And you know, it's one thing, like, okay, making the playoffs, potentially, it's not impossible that they could have home court advantage in the first round, make it to the second round. I agree. I don't see a path for them to be a championship contender, no matter how much pressure Dame puts on them to try to get better. You know, they made
even in these playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, they made this Powell deal, re-sign him, and they already gave up two first-round picks to get Covington. And you know, if Nurkic doesn't get hurt, if they could just fix their bench defense, you know, I could see them being like in the middle of that West playoff picture again next year. So that's not worth nothing. But I think when you've sort of been with this, essentially the same group now, this is six playoffs in a row that they've made. They've made it to the conference finals once in a very easy bracket. They've only made the second round, I think, one other time. I'm sorry. Well, yeah, one other time, you know, since, we'll say since Aldridge left, one other time. And it took the Clippers suffering a boatload of injuries for them to get to that in 2016. And they've had some pretty ugly first round defeats. Like, I think you've explored the ceiling of this group. And also the reality is that, you know, Dame Lillard is probably about the 10th best player in the NBA. And this is about the team that you get when you build a team around the 10th best player in the NBA. Like, I don't, maybe if you do an unbelievable job, you can be better. But this is kind of about where I would have expected them to be, given who their best player is and some decent guys
with
around
with no other all-star on the roster.
If you got, and even if you had, like, you know, a lower level all-star who wasn't as good as Dame, I still don't think you're necessarily a championship contender in most seasons. Mm-hmm. So I think you've kind of, there isn't much ceiling left to explore with this group. You know, whereas if you're the Chicago Bulls, yeah, you would love to build up to having the next 6 years be what the last 6 years was in Portland, because you've just been so bad so far. But, you know, you've kind of, you've seen what this can be, and adding one more year to that era, I don't think that's worth that much. I don't know. Blazers fans might disagree, and I'm sure they'd love to have Dame retire in a Blazers uniform, but this isn't Steph Curry, who's already won three championships, right? Like, he wants to win at the highest level still. And so for him to go through his entire career with the Blazers and have one conference finals where they got swept and one other second round appearance as like the highlights, it's just, I don't think it's realistic for a guy of his caliber to stay in one place that long when those are the highs.
Yeah, absolutely. And this, I mean, this was the exact point when they moved on from Clyde Drexler, to offer one parallel. And I mean, that was a team that had gotten to the finals and gotten to a game six of the conference finals twice, like that, you know, they had a little more in their bag in terms of accomplishments.
So you wrote about this with DA today. Mm-hmm. We don't need to get too into the weeds here, but any destinations that come to mind for you for Lillard?
I think New York is the one that stands out to me. They can take in the contract. They can trade a bunch of picks. They can trade Toppin. They can trade, potentially Quickly. They can just put a lot in there, and then they can save Portland so much money, because they can take him in the room. Blazers generate a huge exception that way. They could do other stuff with it, similar to how Memphis did 2 years ago with the Conley deal. And I think New York would be a place that would be high on Lillard's list of places he'd want to end up. So that's the one that stands out to me. There are definitely other teams that can get into this and will certainly try to get into this, but New York is the one that stands out to me in terms of the opportunity, the desirability for the player, and then I think the team would be willing to push their chips in for him.
So a couple thoughts there. Number one, I think, you know, is RJ Barrett enough of a centerpiece in that deal for Portland? If I'm New York, I would say so. Yeah, I'm not as high on Barrett, but he also was a number three overall pick. He's got some superficial stats that look pretty good. You know, maybe you can sell him as a piece to your fan base as well. Mm-hmm. They can put some better pieces around RJ Barrett. But, and pairing Randall and Damian Lillard together. Now, is that team better than the Portland Trailblazers have been the last 6 years? Now, it's New York, right? More people want to go there. There's maybe just some appeal of like being a big star in New York and being in the East. But I don't see that as a championship contending group. You know, like, ultimately Dame is going to have to join up with a player who's better than him if he realistically expects to win a championship. So, you know, if I'm Lillard and all I care about is winning, is it worth kind of giving up the Portland legacy to go to New York? I mean, maybe you just think that there are then other moves that you can make because you're New York.
That would have to be part of the equation, I think, is just thinking that people will want to come if you're the Knicks, whereas it might not happen if you're, you know, if you go to, say, New Orleans. Like, you know, you could drop some pretty good New Orleans scenarios. I mean, you know, in the article I did with David, we mentioned putting Brandon Ingram in a deal, obviously, but there are ways you could possibly do it without Brandon Ingram because they have so much draft equity they can put on the table. Which would be interesting, like Lillard, Ingram, Williamson. Okay, like that, you know, you might give up 120 points a game, but you're sort of set up like Brooklyn, where it's like, who cares? We're going to score 150.
Yeah, or you could then trade Ingram for something else. I would imagine, though, that Portland would be quite insistent that Brandon Ingram be in that. It also just doesn't seem like someone wants, like Dave Lillard, he's going to have a say in this of where he wants to go. I know he's under contract for three more years, but it just seems kind of unlikely that he would want to go to New Orleans.
That's I think that's one of those where he starts sending out smoke signals through his agent that thank you, but no thank you. And then that cools it off for them. What do you think about Philly with Ben Simmons?
Yeah, I've said this before that just doesn't have a ton of appeal to me if I'm Portland. Now, if he really demands out, could that possibly be the best deal? I guess maybe it would make more sense for a three-way trade. I just don't really like rebuilding around Ben Simmons. If it's part of it is just selling it to your fan base, he is an all-star. Is he going to sell tickets or whatever? I don't know. Like, to me, he's just good enough to get you to where you're not where you want to be in the draft as you're trying to rebuild.
Yeah. That's the move you make if you're trying not to bottom out.
Yeah.
Which is probably the wrong move, though.
Right.
I mean, I think the better move with where they are is if you trade Lillard, like, you turn around and trade Covington and Nurkic and McCollum, too.
Absolutely. I mean, and even you might hope to get some of those guys to just come with you as well to wherever the new place is and be part of the deal. What about the Celtics for Jaylen Brown?
Ooh. See, I hadn't thought of that one. You know, if I'm Boston, like, I kind of like Jaylen Brown's contract better than Lillard's.
Yeah, but I mean, Lillard and Tatum, that's like that. And then, I mean, probably the other thing you would hope to get is just maybe see if you could maybe even put Al Horford in that deal and get back like Covington and Nurkic as well. Maybe that could be part of it to get a little bit more depth and kind of we're going to be Portland, but we just added Jason Tatum. Like what your team would be.
Yeah.
But, and I think the appeal there might be that, you know, now Jaylen Brown is under contract for three more years, just like Lillard. Maybe you run into that same issue if you're Portland of, you know, we'd probably rather just rebuild with guys on rookie contracts. So, like, I think Jaylen Brown is good. I would much rather have him than Ben Simmons. But I'm also then in the same situation of, all right, where are we going with Jaylen Brown? And now we're going to rebuild with a bunch of draft picks. Like, are we going to try and win 35 games? Like, what are we doing here? You know, I think you think, oh, yeah, young player on a contract, but just Jaylen Brown and nothing. Is there a lot of appeal there? Not to me. Maybe Neil O'Shea fighting for his job would feel differently.
Yeah. That's, like you say, I mean, that's another one where you're doing it more to prevent bottoming out, where the thing you probably need to do is just bottom out.
Yeah. Or are you going to try to like be respectable this year with Jaylen Brown basically replacing Lillard on your team?
You see, the problem is you miss out on getting stuff for Covington and Nurkic then because they're in the final years of their deal.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I would go ahead and move those guys. You can get stuff. I mean, they're on good numbers too. Like, you can get stuff for them.
No, I think you're right. I mean, Covington, maybe he could get the Robert Covington package for Robert Covington.
Yeah, exactly.
Although he's only got 1 year left now, and he probably
with 1 year left.
Yeah, his star is probably falling a little bit, but you could probably get a first round pick for him.
Yeah, I would think so.
Most protein bars are awful. I like to work out. I've tried basically all of them. And before Built Bar, I'd resigned myself to the idea that they're all going to taste like a rock quarry. But now, with 18 amazing flavors, the improved Built Bar is even more delicious. There's 6 new flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. Of course, there are classics like raspberry, peanut butter, double chocolate, peanut butter brownie. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate. That makes a huge difference. By the way, they're soft and easy to chew, but they're still great for the health conscious person. For example, peanut butter, 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs. Great for a keto diet. And you can even get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. If the last year has taught us anything, it's that we don't really need bricks and mortar stores anymore. Going to your local auto parts store really was not a good experience to begin with. In that front area, they never really had anything other than just totally generic stuff. And then you would go to that desk, you probably had to wait in line while the one person who was there at the counter tried to find the part that the person in front of you wanted. And then finally, when you got up there, you'd ask for your part and they'd say, oh yeah, we can order that. It'll be here in 2 weeks. Well, great. I could have just stayed at home and used rockauto.com, got my part faster, and saved a bunch of money. Chain stores at different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. So go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car and truck. You just put your make and model in there. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. Okay, wanted to talk to you a little bit about your trip to the Combine, and you wrote a piece on some of the rumors there. And one of the big things that you had that I wanted to expand on is that there seems to be an expectation that the Warriors are going to try to make a trade using James Wiseman and the number 7 pick.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this comes as a shock to people. I mean, they need to maximize the tail end of the Steph Draymond era. And I think really that, you know, those two play-in games really expose that they just don't have enough around those guys yet. And even with Klay coming back, I think it's uncertain what he comes back as and at what level. And even if he came back as the Klay of old, I think you still question the overall strength of that team, certainly compared to what they had a few years ago. And so what the assets you have to go and get that other star, I mean, you have good stuff with 7 and with Wiseman, but you got to put it on the table.
Well, and also I think they need the salary of Wiseman.
Potentially. I mean, it depends if Wiggins is in the deal or not, but if not, then that $9 million for Wiseman, you could potentially sign the 7th pick and then trade him a month later, throw in Kevon Looney, and now you get to 20. Now you can do some stuff, right?
Yeah. You could, I mean, those sign the guy and trade him a month later, those could be a little more difficult. I think there's only one of those that's been done, which is the Wiggins Love.
The Wiggins, yeah.
But so you mentioned that there's a thought that maybe Pascal Siakam would be involved there. Do you want to expand on what the conception of that might be?
Yeah, I mean, if you're Toronto, where you're looking to maybe not do a full reload, but maybe it's a time to take a half step back and try to kind of get to your next generation. You look at that Siakam deal with the 3 years left, and you're kind of maybe having a little bit of buyer's remorse. He's a little older than Ananobi, certainly, and a couple of the other guys there. And I mean, he's a pretty perfect fit for Golden State if you look at next year's roster. I mean, if you go out there with Curry and Thompson in the backcourt and then Siakam and Green in the front court, I think that's pretty tempting. And then obviously, if you're Toronto, you get Wiggins back, who's a Canadian, who's from that area. You know, I think they've always kind of looked more favorably on Canadian players there for obvious reasons. So that could be another incentive for you. And then you're getting really good assets out of this when you talk about, Wiseman is variable depending on who you talk to, but certainly getting the 7th pick.
So that's interesting. That's what I was wondering is like, is Wiggins in that deal? And if you see Wiggins as kind of a negative contract, then maybe that makes some more sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Siakam's number next year is 33, right? I think it's tough for Golden State to get to a match on that without Wiggins being the deal. I guess you could theoretically get there. There'd have to be a lot of smileys in that deal, though.
Yeah, I calculated it out. If they did the conception you're talking about, and they also put 14 in there, and you know, they could maybe involve Oubre in a sign and trade, depending on what other options.
Yeah, an Oubre sign and trade would be the other way to get there. Yeah,
but is Pascal Siakam actually better for the Warriors than Andrew Wiggins is? Like, I realize Siakam is a superior player in a vacuum, but you do already have Green. Do they want to commit to playing Green at center full time? And then they still don't really have like a great wing stopper at the three. I realize Wiggins is not like unbelievable there, but he can guard his position one-on-one, and he hit shots enough this season. Like, I think he was a valuable player for them. And I think that the role of Wiggins is kind of harder to fill than Siakam. But then you also throw in that you're making the trade with number seven and Wiseman. I don't know what Wiseman's value is, but number seven is pretty good value.
Yeah.
And you're also getting back Pascal Siakam, who's on a bad contract himself. I do like the idea of having another guy who can work into the mid-range and score. You know, the lack of shooting between Siakam and Draymond is not great. Like, where does Siakam stand when Draymond's doing all his stuff with the ball? I worry about that. I worry about Draymond being the center full-time for an entire season. That seems like something they've wanted to avoid. So I don't know that I would want to do that if I were Golden State.
Well, I think if you're Golden State, you're going to have to get a center either way, right? I mean, I think you're not believing in Wiseman at this point, right? Certainly, yeah. Kevon Looney's not the answer. So that they do have to find a center from somewhere either way. And that doesn't mean they can't play with Draymond at the five, but and maybe play a whole playoff series even with Draymond on the five. But you're not getting through 82 games with Draymond at the five.
Yeah, they did it for like 2 months this year, and I mean it looked awesome as well, right? But yeah, and they didn't technically start him at the five, but he played a lot of minutes at the five against backup groups. All right, we got here maybe like 10 more minutes before we do the Q&A. You want to do like a couple of like quick postmortems here on some more of the vanquished teams? We got wrapped up in Philly and Ben Simmons last week, but we still got Brooklyn out there. We got Utah out there. Maybe Utah is an interesting one to talk about.
Yeah,
let's
talk about Utah, because I mean there had been whispers for a while that there was bad juju between Quinn Snyder and Dennis Lindsay, and I think that finally came to a head here. I think Andy Larson did some really good reporting on that whole situation. And so, which is unfortunate, but I think it's really hard for a front office coach relationship to really stay on a good footing for several years. Like, it's just because your interests are so at odds with each other usually. I mean, coaching is so much about the present and front office work is so much about the future and what's next. You're just on completely different wavelengths, how you look at your team and how you look at the league.
Or in the case of drafting Udoka Azubuike or wanting to play Favors and Gobert together, the front office work is about the past.
Well, that could be too. Although, I mean, that part felt a little bit like a parting shot. I mean, they did a lot of other stuff there that was built more toward a modern game.
No, absolutely. And Lindsay, overall, I think you did a very solid job there, like getting Gobert and Mitchell at the places that they did. You could complain about some other stuff, but they did pretty well there, I think, overall. I mean, you don't build a 60-win team from scratch without, you know, knowing what you're doing a little bit. But if they're not, he and Quinn couldn't even talk to each other, then obviously like a change needed to be made.
Absolutely. So I think there's going to be a market for him. I mean, he's got a really good track record, so I'm interested to see what his next move is. I don't think he's just going to stay as an advisor to the Utah Jazz, certainly.
No, that seems unlikely, and that's what some of the reporting indicated. But what about just their situation going forward here now and trying to re-sign Mike Conley, potentially? Maybe that's a good place to start. It's like, what do you see Mike Conley's market as being? What's like a fair contract for him, given the fact that he's played at an all-star level when healthy, but has really struggled with this hamstring thing the last couple of years? He's 34.
Yeah, so I think certainly he's not going to get the contract that he had, right? But, you know, maybe when you look at something in the, what do you think? He probably gets like a two-year deal, maybe 40 to 45 million.
Yeah, it seems like along those lines. Yeah, something in the 40 to 60 million guaranteed. You know, is there a third year out there for him? Maybe it would be a third year partial guarantee, particularly for a team that maybe doesn't have the space to give him as much, or, and this could be the Jazz too, honestly, as a way to.
I mean, that's what we did. That's what we did with Vince Carter, essentially, when we signed him. We didn't realize he would, you know, defy the laws of aging, but we gave him a 3-year deal with a partial on the third year to kind of give an extra fill-up of money because we only had the mid-level exception to offer him in years 1 and 2. Turned out the third year of the contract was his best year that he had for us, but we didn't know that going in. So yeah, you could see something like that with Mike, where, you know, maybe a team only had 20 million in room, but they could say, hey, we'll give you, you know, 50 million over 3, but it's on a partial third year.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. But I mean, do you see other suitors out there for him outside of Utah?
I think the Knicks could be in play because they need a point guard and they're in a win now mode. Setting aside whether they ought to be in a win now mode, I think they are.
Yeah. With Tom Thibodeau, you think so?
Yeah, exactly. What about Miami?
Yeah, I think they're hoping to fry some bigger fish, but
yeah,
I mean, yeah. So I you know, with Dinwiddie out there, Dinwiddie versus Conley, I think is kind of eye of the beholder. I think Kyle Lowry will probably be ahead of either of those two, and you know, CP is out there too. Although you have to imagine he's going to be going back to Phoenix, but I think teams will at least want to get an idea of whether he would be first.
The team to watch with Conley is Dallas, though. I mean, sure. they were the team that was after him when he was a free agent last time, and he re-signed with us. So yeah, I would definitely keep an eye on Dallas. They can get to, looks like, 25 in room, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, possibly even more than that if Josh Richardson opts out, which who knows what he's going to do there. I think he probably said, but he might just want out of there at this point.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I think he's going to have other suitors. You know, it makes the most sense for him to return to the Jazz. And but I mean, this tax bill for the Jazz is just going to be astronomical. So they probably got to get off of some guys, right? I mean, is that if they bring back Conley, Ingles, Favors, or Clarkson, at least one of those guys I think has got to go.
Yeah, that's where, you know, them capitulating on the Gobert extension wasn't great. They dodged a bullet on Mitchell, right? Because that could have cost him another $5 million a year when they, you know, they were going to give him the bonus for making third team All-NBA. And that could have been an expensive mistake. But Gobert's number goes from $27 million to $35 now. You know, they gave him the 5-year supermax, which I don't feel like they needed to do that. And now they're going to start paying for that. So I think the first thing you're going to see, I mean, if there's a guy who goes, I mean, it's got to be Derek Favors, right? He's making 9.7 for a 5-minute role, which is why I didn't really understand this in the first place. I thought like a Justin Holiday type make more sense for Utah for their postseason, even though Favors might have helped them more in the regular season. And I think we saw that play out. So I think that's the first domino is Favors.
But what are you willing to give up to get off of him, though, is the question. And what can you? Like, they don't have much in the way of seconds. I don't think a team wants to just take him at this point, right?
Probably not. I mean, you know, what can you do with that 30th pick to improve your cap situation? You know, or, you know, do you have to do Favors and Ingles as a package deal? But man, now you really start getting thin on the perimeter and have to start, you know, moving dominoes there. Again, I mean, that Azubuike pick, not picking a perimeter player there and then doing all this other stuff with Tony Bradley and Ed Davis or whatever, just to handle the front court situation. Like, I think that really there's some opportunity cost with that where they could have fortified their perimeter and been in better shape there. And now that's going to maybe come back on them here.
Yeah, because not only we're solely talking about the finances and keeping this group together at this point, but I think the series against the Clippers showed that they need at least one more decent perimeter defender as well. So, I mean, ideally, you'd be adding more athleticism on the wing to this group rather than talking about having to cut some money.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm sure they're hoping that Mieoni or Elijah Hughes can fill some of that, but we just haven't seen that yet.
So this was the idea that I had. The 30th pick, mm-hmm. Joe Ingles, and their likely 2024 first rounder to Oklahoma City for Lu Dort.
Ooh.
Is that a deal? Is that, you know, I posed this on my pod before, but wanted to get your thoughts on it. Is that like just not enough for Lu Dort, especially considering how good his contract is?
Huh. See, my first instinct is that it's almost too much for Lu Dort, but I mean, his contract is so good. You're right that maybe not. You know, could you trade Joe Ingles for something and instead of just just dropping him on the Thunder, because the Thunder are going to get paid twice, right? Coming and going.
Well, yeah, that's kind of like that's kind of part of the appeal there as well. And also, like the Thunder,
I would go more like 30, the 2024 first, and favors for Lu Dort. I don't know. I think that might be a little better.
Yeah. Well, you also then you have to pay the Thunder to take on the next year of his contract as well, that $10 million player option. But you know, to me, Ingles,
yeah,
he's just not really a playoff guy at this point in time. It definitely helps you. I mean, I probably had him as a second for my sixth man behind Thaddeus Young. I think he's better than Clarkson, but he's gotten to the point where he's just too slow defensively at this point in time, and so it's just really difficult to play him against the best teams in the playoffs. And so, you know, I think like moving on from him is not the end of the world, and he's someone who would have positive value to another team. But that's the sort of trade, yeah, where you're someone who's on a cheaper contract and you're giving up draft pick equity to get younger, get more athletic, and also get cheaper at the same time. Maybe it's not Lu Dort, yeah, maybe it's somebody else.
That I think conceptually, like, that is something that Utah needs to target. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Jordan Clarkson kind of falls into the same category as well. He's got a longer deal though than Ingles, but because he just won sixth man, maybe he actually would have some positive trade value. But another guy who's just kind of pretty limited defensively, and if you're going to have Conley and Mitchell, you just need more athleticism on the perimeter. Aside from those guys, you got 2 6-1 guards in your backcourt.
Yeah. The other thing you could look at is there a sign and trade with Conley that gets you, you know, a 6-7 guy who can guard on the perimeter and make some shots?
Yeah, and maybe just throw Donovan Mitchell the ball all the time. I mean, I think, again, you're a little low on passing, though. I still think that they're... Like, yeah, Donovan Mitchell is still a guy who is pretty shoot first, but, you know, I mean, maybe he can just play the Gilbert Arenas role and kind of be the point guard, but still be a shoot first player.
Yeah. Again, I mean, when you don't have like a true blue superstar, which I don't think Utah does, you know, you're just like, you're making all these marginal trade-offs. It's really hard. Like, it's really impressive they had the year they had, actually, and that they built this team up to this point without like that one guy. But you're going to see in these coming years, I think, how hard it is to maintain at that level.
Yeah, and I'm sure they hope that Mitchell will get there. Some people in Utah would argue that Mitchell is at that level, but again, I wouldn't put him in like the top 15 players in the NBA necessarily at this point in time. All right, I think that's
not either.
I think that's pretty good here for today's podcast, and we will talk to y'all next week. But let's get into our speaker requests here. So y'all feel free to jump those in there. We'll take a few questions here from the comments. Let's start here. Richard Lee asked, who do you see being a good coaching hire in New Orleans to help appease Zion news that Jock Vaughn is not going to be pursuing opportunities? He has someone who'd been bandied about as potentially a guy there. So, I mean, this one feels like kind of a first-time head coach, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. They can't afford to not get a first-time head coach, basically. I mean, they're paying Stan Van Gundy top dollar for, I think, 3 more years. So, No.
It was a mutual parting of the ways. They don't have to pay him.
Oh, my mistake. Yes, of course. How dare I say something to the contrary? I've heard really good things about Charles Lee, though. So I think that would be a really interesting hire. Another name I think you're still hearing is Teresa Weatherspoon. You know, obviously has roots down there and has some connections with the players that are there. That would be a groundbreaking hire, obviously. Jock Vaughn pulling his name out. I mean, I hate to say it. I think there might be some sighs of relief based on how things went in Orlando.
Although he did well, I thought, last year with the Nets.
So I was about to say the bubble Nets, he got a lot out of a team that was very injured. So I think he helped himself with that. I would completely agree with that.
And their defense this year, I think he was like their defensive guy. Their defense in the Bucks series was good. Like I think he's done, you know, I agree with you on his previous tenure, but I think he's done what you kind of need to do as an assistant and an interim guy to maybe deserve another shot. Like I'm not going to judge him solely. I mean, we'll put it this way. If Jason Kidd can get another shot, like Jock Vaughn would probably get another shot.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, really. That's what's so wild about the Kidd thing, right? Like he's, forget all the other stuff with the, you know, the background and what's going on with Dallas and the harassment stuff that happened there and everything. Like, is he even a good coach? Like, that's the part that has me scratching my head.
Yeah. So feel free, by the way, guys, to get some, you can ask questions here. I'm not getting any speaker requests. It might be due to the technical difficulties, but feel free to ask some questions in the room. We'll get to that, just in text form, or you can ask to speak. All right. Yeah. Here we go. Actually, before we get to this one from Rome, we're going to talk about the Blazers. Let's talk a little bit about this Dallas thing, John, because this is my interpretation of the Nico Harrison and Jason Kidd hires, that it's really just about changing the perception of the organization in the league and trying to attract that second star to play with Luka.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that probably had something to do with it. I actually wonder if this was already in the works and that's why Donnie Nelson ended up pushed out. That they definitely had, I mean, they thought they had their second star in Porzingis and now they realize they don't. And the trouble for Dallas is that like Cuban has always been trying to play this free agent game ever since they won the championship, ironically, and has just taken the L so many times on these players they pursued. I mean, we talked about Conley before, but you know, the DeAndre Jordan thing with the locking him in the apartment or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they set aside room for to pursue. I mean, even for this year, they set aside room to pursue. Oh, we're going to pursue Giannis. We're going to pursue Paul George and all these other guys. And none of them became free agents. So I think they're kind of scratching their heads trying to figure out how they get another guy in there for Luka. And so I think that was part of it. And I think that maybe also a realization that just they kind of needed to, Jay, I mean, things went sideways this year in Dallas on multiple levels. And, you know, there's some great reporting by Tim Cato over the Athletic where I work, about the situation there and some dysfunction in the front office between Carlisle and Bob Vulgaris and Donnie Nelson. And so I think there was just a lot going on there. But so Nico Harrison, I didn't really know much about him, but from what I've read and heard since then, I mean, this is kind of an interesting hire because he has worked at a high level on the Nike side for a long time and has, you know, has these relationships and dealt with some of the same things that you deal with in an NBA front office.
Yeah, and certainly someone that everyone raves about, seems to be like a high emotional intelligence guy, which the Mavs maybe could use an upgrade on, given some of the some of the figures there. So I think that's a good point. Although I was disappointed that you left out the failed pursuits of Dwight Howard and Deron Williams in your list of Mavs.
Oh,
free agent
thank
fails.
You. Thank you.
Jose Calderon and Monte Ellis coming down. Okay. let's get some more here. And for Rome, could you see the Blazers compromising their draft future this summer in an effort to appease Lillard?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, especially with the GM being on the clock. The problem is the first round pick they already owe to Houston is top 14 protected through 2027. So it's going to make it hard for them to put in a first available that is super tempting for another team.
Well, wait a minute. Isn't that, no, that just conveys this year, right? Then they're done.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. I had it as a future, but yeah, they're done. Okay. So scratch that analysis. Yeah.
So, compromise away with your future, baby.
Compromise away, exactly.
Unfettered.
Yeah. That is definitely on the table. I mean, they obviously have contracts to put in deals. I'm sure Derek Jones Jr. will be very available once he opts in. You know, you look at some of these other deals, contracts that they have. I mean, could McCollum and multiple firsts get you something? They have a few different ways to go.
Who's better than CJ? I mean, the CJ for Simmons thing is being talked about a lot, and that'll be a funny pissing match about which of those players has more value between Simmons and CJ.
Yeah, I actually don't see either team doing that.
No, perhaps not. I might want to get off of CJ now, though. He looked very mortal in the playoffs and at age 30.
Yeah. And for a guy who usually does not look that way in the playoffs, right? And that, you know, $100 million over the next 3 years. Yeah, that's a little scary for sure.
Okay, here's another one. Phil Flores, do you think Detroit could actually pass on Cade, or is this green to Detroit thing just bunk?
It is definitely not just smoke. I have that on pretty good authority. Like, they like Jalen Green. They are intrigued by him. His upside is a scorer. Now, if he's your guy, do you take him at one? Or do you do like a Fultz Tatum thing and try to move down to two or three and get some draft equity out of it and then take him? I think that's an interesting question.
Houston has some picks available.
Yeah. So if you look at your draft board and say, well, we have a one and a 1A. So if somebody is completely over the moon for Cade Cunningham and we like Jalen Green just as much, and we can actually get him at a lower salary too as a second pick, why wouldn't you do that? I think I do see some logic in that if that is your evaluation as a front office. So I think that is going to be a really interesting thing to watch. And I don't think it's just smokescreen.
Colin says, with high schoolers potentially being able to be drafted again, does that make front office jobs harder? How would that have changed your job in Memphis when you were there?
Yeah, I think, you know, going around evaluating high schoolers is harder on two levels. One, they're just younger. So you're just coloring in more lines that may or may not be there. The other thing is you're not seeing them play against as high level competition because you're watching them in AAU tournaments and high school games and whatnot. So I think it's more difficult because of that too. I've talked to some scouts about this who were scouting when high schoolers were eligible, and they seemed to think it wasn't that big a deal, actually. So their opinion differed from mine. But I don't know. To me, I feel like it would have changed my job and my ability to evaluate significantly. And I guess coming from an analytics side too, like when you're evaluating high schoolers, it becomes almost all eye test. So I don't know. Maybe I naturally kind of retch against that.
Yeah, I mean, you've got like the EYBL stats that apparently have some kind of predictive value.
You do, and U18s and stuff. I mean, you have some information you can work with, but it's hazier.
Now, I would say that I think having scouted approximately 1/1000th as many games in person as you have for players, but I actually sometimes found that like the Hoop Summit and Adidas Nations and some of like the high school all-star stuff, I actually found those more useful than college tape a lot of the time, because I think sometimes the level of competition is higher just in terms of like the overall talent level. Now, obviously, if we're talking about a guy playing like a high school game in January in South Carolina or something, then yeah, that's a little bit different. Although a lot of these guys play on high school teams that are so good at this point, you know, if they're like Montverde or something like that,
If you watch the game where they play against another loaded high school team, yeah, that could be helpful too. And I do agree with Hoop Summit. The problem is it's just such a small data point,
right,
where you're watching a couple of practices in one game, as opposed to seeing a whole season.
No, I agree with you. I do think, and also college basketball now is the longer 3-point line. I think college basketball is strategically changing to be more like pro basketball than it was maybe 5 or 10 years ago. So maybe college is more useful now than it used to be. So yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. It'd make my job a little bit harder, but I'm not the one who has to actually go in person and see many of these. All right. And let's do one more here. Do you think, what roster improvements could Charlotte make to try to be the next young, dangerous team?
They're low-key in pretty good shape. I mean, they got a lot of cap room if they want to use it. I mean, it looks like they can get to like 20-ish million, yep, even with Devontae Graham's cap hold. And so, you know, I think you make a play for a center is probably the biggest thing.
That's what you'd be looking to do if you were them.
Yeah. And maybe, I mean, how much can you fake your way through against good teams playing PJ Washington at 5 and Bridges at 4? Like, is that sustainable at a high level? Or is it just like a fun little ruse that, you know, gets you through some games in January? I do think there's going to be some centers out there. You know, reasonable people can disagree on whether any of them are worth $20 million a year. I think that's one of the things they're really going to have to look hard and evaluate. I could see them making a run at like Jared Allen, though. You know, at least play a game of chicken with Cleveland, maybe. Are there other guys that they could bring in to fill that space? It's where it gets a little tricky. Like, does somebody like Montrezl Harrell make sense for them?
Yeah.
I don't, you know, maybe not.
that's where it gets tough. But I think definitely, I mean, you got to address the front court.
So I think they have two paths. One is, okay, let's just get as good as we can for next year, which has largely been the mantra in Charlotte for quite some time. The other one is, you know, so, okay, go after Rashawn Holmes. I wouldn't want to spend $20 million on him, but, you know, I think he's the best center on the market, can roll out. Like, I do think in the short term, particularly having a good role man, someone like Harrell as well. Again, you don't want to pay him too much, but someone who could be a good role man for LaMelo, because they don't actually have any centers under contract for next year at all right now. You know, maybe they'd bring back Cody Zeller as the backup as well. Yeah. But you also might say, you know, traditional centers, where are we going with a lot of money locked up in a traditional center? And but you could say, hey, you know, like the Bucks and the Hawks, they're playing traditional centers this year. As a quick aside, how many teams are going to like push all the chips in based on what Phoenix and Atlanta did this year and just totally screw that up and like mess up their futures? Now, like trying to emulate them, but
yeah.
So like, what about what about Charlotte as a Siakam destination?
Ooh, okay. I kind of like that. So you could do you could do like an unbalanced trade, right? Like they don't have quite enough room, but are you saying like you'd put like Bridges or something, or
yeah, or maybe you would go with a pick, or maybe even Toronto would just kind of be happy to get off of that money to some degree. So you know, you might have to put a pick in the future, but I like it because he could play pick and roll. He could be another mismatch scorer. Could play some small ball center if you needed him to. Then you just kind of get a couple of bargain basement fives, but maybe you close with Siakam at the five. You've got Hayward still, Rozier, Siakam, LaMelo. Like, that might be pretty good.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I like that. There's maybe a little bit of calisthenics that has to happen to get the salary in there. But actually, if they were willing to put Terry Rozier in, they could definitely get there.
So, yeah, I have no idea, though, what Toronto is thinking, how they're feeling about Siakam, who their general manager might be for next year. Is that
right,
important?
Right. Toronto is definitely kind of the mystery meat as far as what's going to happen this offseason. I think people don't totally know yet if they're coming or going.
All right. Well, we unfortunately are going, but thanks to everyone who joined us today on Spotify Green Room. And we'll be back next Wednesday. Normal time is 2 Eastern, 11 Pacific. John's traveling around a little bit more now, so we may make some adjustments to that, but we'll always announce it ahead of time on Twitter, of course. And we'll talk to you all next week. Till then.